The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And for the first time, we are going to Austria. And in this interview, we're going to talk about red wine far more than white wine. And joining me from the oldest vineyard in Austria, the managing director, it is Wolfgang Hamm. And Wolfgang, first off, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Great to be with you.
I want to start here. Can you please say the name of your beautiful vineyard? Because I chickened out because my pronunciations stink.
That's not true, but I happily do this. Stift Kloster Neuburg, as you mentioned, is Austria's oldest winery. You visited it,
yep.
So you saw it yourself.
And it was gorgeous. And we'll get into you and your wine journey and what it means to market wine and what are the challenges of marketing wine versus other fields? Because I know you worked in the food industry. But first and foremost, can you tell us a little bit about your red wine program?
Yeah, you know, Austria is primarily known for its white wines. However, Austria is on the same geographical latitude as Burgundy. So Austria actually boasts great indigenous varietals, more on this elegant red wine side. And our winery happens to be the home of two of the three indigenous Austrian red wine grapes. Our most important grape in Austria is the Zweigelt grape, and secondly, the St. Laurent grape. Both have their origin at Stift Kloster Neuburg Winery.
That's okay. That is cool that the origin is right there, which makes sense because, I mean, you guys are so old. Well, let's start with Zweigelt, where I remember on my flight to Vienna, on the plane, we had one. And it was actually pretty good. And I wasn't in first class. I was near the back of the plane. And even then, I'm like, oh, the back of the plane Zweigelt is actually a lovely glass, which, you know, says a lot about the grape. What is it? I was wondering if you could just tell the audience, just what is it? What are the characteristics of Zweigelt?
Zweigelt actually celebrates its 100th anniversary this year and is Austria's most popular red wine grape. It's a crossbred of the two Austrian varietals, St. Laurent and Blaufränkisch, and it's a very juicy wine. Dominant flavors are cherries and Morello cherries. It's medium bodied, medium in tannins, and especially it has very smooth tannins. And that makes also normal Zweigelts really pleasant to drink. And of course, when you give them longer hang time and lower yields, Zweigelt can be really concentrated and a beautiful palate blockbuster.
And then what about St. Laurent? What are the main things people need to know if they're tasting one of those wines from your country?
Yeah, if you love Pinot Noir, you will love St. Laurent because Pinot Noir is the mother grape of St. Laurent. The second parent is not known, at least not until now. So St. Laurent has a similar elegance as Pinot Noir. However, it's darker in fruit characteristics. It has more tannins. It's also a bit darker in color and has more body. And St. Laurent is a particularly great pairing around this time of the year with all these fall cuisine of roasted roasts in general together with pumpkin, with deer, venison, and all this type of game. This is great St. Laurent fare.
And what I would tell people is, as we all know, there's nothing more expensive than Pinot Noir from Burgundy. And it's hard to find, but if you can find Saint Laurent, I would highly recommend it. And for you guys, I remember when we were doing a tasting, some of your Saint Laurent that we tried, if you did it blind, you would think high-end Village, you would think Premier Cru level Burgundy, but just at such a fraction of the price. It really was remarkable and really eye-opening.
Yeah, that's a very valid point you make here. St. Laurent has this direct link to first growth Pinot Noir. However, as it doesn't have its fame yet, the price points are much, much lower. And St. Laurent's also give this lingering touch of spiciness on the palate, which makes it, you know, such a really interesting wine.
I remember about, you just mentioned popularity. We went to this great little restaurant in Vienna, and I was talking to some of the patrons there, and they were telling me, shut up. They're like, don't advertise our wines. We like the prices where they are. If they become popular, we're all going to have to spend more money. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that's a typical Austrian approach. You know, in general, we drink 80% of our wines ourselves and only export 20%. So we share just a little bit with you guys around the world.
Yeah, and not very much at all. I'll go to the LCBO and I'll try to find Austrian reds. I mean, even trying to find yours is basically impossible. How would you want, I mean, in your background, with your job with the winery, would you want to improve that, the 20%? Would you want to increase the amount of sales you do globally?
Yeah, you know, wine is so much more than just business or something you sell. A bottle of wine always is an ambassador for the culture of the place where it was born. And in this respect, we love to see more of our wines around the globe because these bottles all tell a story about the soil, about the climate, about the people, and are at the same time an invitation to visit these places. And in this respect, we are always very, very happy to see our bottles in so many countries being ambassadors for the Austrian wine culture.
Is the hardest part the lack of familiarity? It's easier to sell something called Pinot Noir. It's easier to sell something called Cabernet Sauvignon. It's harder, I would imagine, to sell to restaurants or different parts of the world a wine that's called Zweigelt that people might not know of.
Exactly. I mean, some grape varieties and also some wine regions, especially of the big wine producing countries in the world, have become brands or have become very familiar with so many people, like Tuscany or Bordeaux or Cabernet Sauvignon or Chardonnay, you name it. Austria is the tiny niche in this game. But luckily, there are, on the one hand, enough curious wine drinkers, and on the other hand, so many sommeliers or people in wine bars, in wine shops that have fallen in love with Austrian wines and keep recommending them to their customers so that they, in turn, fall in love with these wines.
If anyone is listening to this podcast in Toronto or Southern Ontario, there's a restaurant in Toronto called Archive Wine Bar, and they sell a bunch of Austrian red wine. So just a little aside for people they want to go and try, Archive is a place to go for it. Gruner Veltliner, is that kind of the tip of the spear for you guys to get into other countries where buyers will be like, okay, Gruner, Austria, I can sell that, and then hopefully it's almost like the Trojan horse, and then maybe it can allow other grapes to get in.
Exactly. Gruner Veltliner almost always is the spearhead of Austrian wine. It's our most important grape. One-third of all Austrian wine is Gruner Veltliner, so it really is our hallmark grape, and it's a great grape. We're so happy that Gruner Veltliner is an indigenous grape in Austria because it really performs well in every category, from the light, easy to drink entry-level Gruner up until Gruners that had really long hang time. And in fact, we just harvested our single vineyard reserve end of last week with beautiful golden grapes. And these very concentrated wines are other great examples of Grüners. Grüners give great ice wines, which you Canadians can also do very, very well. And not last but not least, and not to forget, Grüner Veltliner is a great base wine for sparkling wines.
Yeah.
And this is always, this is for me the proof if a grape really belongs to the great grapes of the world. If it really gives great examples in each of these different ripening categories and types.
You want that, you want that versatility. You want it so that it can serve as just a simple glass at a cafe versus something that is, you know, a lot more gravitas to it, you know, more full bodied. Dumb question by me. Do any of your single varietal Grüner, does it see any old oak or any concrete? Or I'm curious about the program there.
Yeah, we play around with many different styles from fresh stainless steel fermented Grüners. And all of our single vineyard Grüners age and also ferment in wooden barrels, either in large acacia wood barrels, or also then for the top single vineyard, they ferment in 500 liter tonneaus of Austrian oak.
And going back to red for a second, because I wanted to really focus on that because that was the most eye-opening part of visiting you in the vineyard. For your single varietal, for your top level Saint Laurent and Zweigelt, what is the process there in terms of yields, in terms of oak and things like that?
Yeah, you know, it all starts in the vineyard, and our top reds grow in the Taman region, a very warm region south of Vienna, where the soil consists of pure alluvial limestone gravel. So you have plenty of pebbles that soak up the heat during the day, very shallow brown earth, topsoil. And so it's a very windy area. So the grapes are constantly kept dry, even when it rains in the fall. And especially for the top selections, there is really just one bunch of grape per shoot, so that really the grapes get the full nutrients and the full concentration from the vine. And when we harvest the grapes then by hand, they are selected. Every grape that should see any mold or any unhealthiness is cut out. We harvest them in little boxes, and the grapes come to the winery where they are selected a second time, and then they ferment in large wooden fermenters, we call them. So it's like a barrel where the top is open.
Yeah.
And here they have juice a skin contact for 3 to 4 weeks, where the mash is hand punched down several times a day in order to see good extraction of the tannins and fruit flavors that are in the skins and the seeds, and have a great good transfer into the fermenting juice. And this then the most gentle way of doing that is simply doing it by hand.
And then is it old oak, new oak, a combination?
For during fermentation, this is used oak here. It's all about the microoxidation already during the fermentation process. And after fermentation is finished, the wine is racked and then goes into barrels. And again, depending on the style,
right.
Some of the wines go in the large oak casks, where we're not looking for oak taste influence, but again, for the micro-oxidating qualities of the wood staves. And others go into barriques, where you have even more micro-oxidation plus the added flavors from the wood.
It's funny hearing all that, limestone, good sites, low yield, hand-picked, hand-punched, complex, different oak programs depending on the grape. This sounds a lot like Burgundy. And I only bring that up not to try to compare. These wines are different, and your culture is going to be different than a Burgundian culture. But I bring this up just for the audience, just to give them sort of something to compare it to. People that haven't tried Austrian red wines, just to sort of familiarize that there are similarities. Everyone loves Burgundy. So again, my message is to people out there to try these varietals, and especially if they can find yours, Wolfgang, it's a pretty special juice.
I can only agree. We have this Burgundian heritage based on Pinot Noir going on in the next generation with St. Laurent and with Zweigelt, our main grape, being again a child of St. Laurent. There is this direct lineage to Burgundy. Plus, you know, the geographic location in Austria is really perfect. You can say we are in between cool Germany, where we get enough freshness from to make these crisp or world-class white wines, for which Austria is predominantly famous.
Yep.
But on the other side, we got to get enough Mediterranean warmth from our southern neighbor, Italy, to have these full-bodied reds that never lack elegance.
So let's talk about you a little bit. How did you make the journey? I know that you studied economics. You wrote a doctoral thesis on wine marketing. But how, Wolfgang, how did you fall in love? How did you get into wine?
Well, you know, I come from the wine region of Austria, grew up with wine culture, and already my grandparents used to have a mixed farm with animals and fruit orchards and also vineyards. So I came into contact from a very early age on with vineyards and grapes, at least.
Yeah.
And during my youth, I started simply to fall in love with wines, started to work and help out at local wineries, and at one point decided that this is going to be my life.
Was there a bottle? Was there a winery, a country that first, I mean, probably was Austria, but was there one specific bottle or region that really made you fall in love with wine?
Yeah. In fact, it all started with a girl with whom I had a crush on her. I went to visit her, but then it was on an Easter, but then her father opened up a 1977 Gewürztraminer, and that was mind-blowing for me. And yeah, to cut the story short, I spent the whole evening with her father and this wine. And yeah, the wine really kept my attention.
So you chose Gewürztraminer over the girl?
Yes, on this evening at least.
Yeah, and by the way, we've all been there. Anyone who's really into wine, it's nothing against your partner, but when there is something so cool when you discover that new wine. I find it's a combination of both joy and wonder, but also almost a little bit of confusion. It's like a puzzle. It's like, what is this? Why does it taste and smell like this? I need to learn everything about what's in my glass because it's having a reaction all over me.
That's how I felt.
Yeah. So what are some of the challenges of marketing wine versus other fields? I know I mentioned earlier, I was reading you worked in the food industry. What are the challenges and joys of marketing wine?
Yeah, I honestly rather experience the joys about it, because wine is an authentic product. I don't need to come up in our case with any marketing stories and suck anything out of my fingers to make up something which has not been there. I mean, at Stiftkloster Narberg, with a history of more than 900 years, we have been cultivating since our foundation in the year 1114. So it's all real. And we want to give people this experience and give them this message in the bottle about Austria's great wine culture. And in the end, what we try to make is to make people happy by giving them the joy of enjoying a great glass of wine.
I mean, on one level, it's an easy sell because it's a cool story and it's a well-made product. What are the toughest parts for you? Is it the travel? Is it breaking into new countries? And I don't mean this in a negative way. All our jobs have challenges in it. What are the challenges for you?
Probably the toughest challenge is when a vintage is difficult.
Right.
Because that's one of the things you really need to learn. You have to be really humble. A vintage grapes or wine, it's always a gift. I mean, you can work as hard as you can to make the best and give the best in the vineyard. But if a hailstorm comes and takes it all away or just simply destroys the quality, there's in some cases not much you can do about it. And having to see that or having to cope with the vintage that is not as easy, and then having a product where you see you haven't been able to use the full potential this vintage would have had, that's difficult.
That's interesting that you use humility, because that is a constant theme on this podcast, usually when I'm talking to the winemakers. But I guess it permeates throughout the entire winery, because, I mean, yeah, on one level, you can be in control of so many things, and you can make 100 reservations with different buyers from all over and have a great story and a great PowerPoint presentation or whatever else, but you have no control over the weather. Yeah, that would be a difficult one on the marketing side as well.
Yeah, I think we can all be happy that there is things in life and in the world where we don't have control. But yeah, that's how it is.
Yes, it is. How much travel are you doing now? And I mean, I guess COVID must have greatly curtailed that. When you're really busy, how much travel do you have to do?
You know, I try to have a good balance between being on site and really not to lose focus on what's going on in the vineyards and in the cellar. But at the same time, I enjoy a lot sharing our philosophy with people in other countries. And so after COVID, luckily, where travel is much more easier again, I have been on the road quite a bit, basically every week now these past weeks, just coming back from a wine presentation in Poland. I've been in Finland, in Belgium, and in Northern Italy. So, yeah.
Is there one country that you export the most to? Is there one that really gravitates towards your wines?
Well, logically, it's our neighbor countries, Germany and Switzerland, that are our most important export markets. So the majority of our wines are distributed in Europe. However, we also export to the United States, to Canada, and also in Asia to China, Taiwan, Japan, and even a bit to Australia, and not to forget Thailand.
Yep, that's a far trip. How much did COVID impact you guys over those 2 years, 2020 and 21? What impact did it have on you or the Austrian wine scene as a whole?
I think the impact differed from country to country, depending if there were lockdowns and if gastronomy was open or closed.
Right.
And Austria had quite a strict COVID policy. So probably our home market was affected the most. And also in our winery, we usually have a lot of events and celebrations. And of course, this all did not happen. But people kept faith in our wines and ordered them either online or bought them for home consumption at other outlets. So we came through the COVID crisis only with light bruises.
Yeah, good. Listen, that's great to hear. Better than, you know, some parts in South Africa where they had total bans of all alcohol. It felt like Al Capone from the 1930s or something. and so for Vienna stuff right now, can you get a sense of, is the tourism back to sort of normal? Is it still a little less than what it was, say, in 2019?
Tourism has rebounded mostly. Visitors from Asia are still not back yet. And of course, the horrible war of Russia against the Ukraine affects tourism from this region of the world. But in general, the streets, restaurants, and hotels in Vienna are very busy again.
That's how it felt for me. I was there at the end of May. Actually, real quick, stupid of me to forget about it, but how much do you feel? And obviously, it's very different than if you were in the Ukraine. It's completely different. But the war that's going on right now, what is the current day impact? Because where you are is obviously far closer than me here in Canada.
Luckily, there is no direct impact in Austria. Austria tries to help the people that are fleeing from Ukraine to find a new home, hopefully temporarily for these people. Also, we in the winery, we employ a beautiful lady from Mariupol, from one of the hardest hit cities of the Ukraine now. And this is probably the biggest form how you could feel the war in the Ukraine and Austria in general. We are a small country, but we are the country with the highest per capita hosting of refugees in Europe.
As we end this, I should have asked at the beginning. How long have you been with Stift?
It's been 15 years this year. So time went by so fast. Yep. But looking at my hair, you can tell already.
And how different are you now versus when you started? Like just your own knowledge, your own appreciation of these wines, and just your own in your own job. I'm always curious about people's own journey.
Yeah, I think the humbleness I talked about earlier in versus the weather is something which has probably increased in my personality, because with wine, you will never become a master. You will never stop learning, and you will never reach the point where you feel, now I got it figured out. And living this challenge of trying to get better and better and adapting, using the great knowledge from the past and combining it with the new things we keep on learning on the physiology of the grape and of new winemaking techniques. That's an environment in which you will never get bored.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. Very, very well said. You're right. It is a cool challenge, and it always does keep you humble. As we end this, Wolfgang, because I'm a total coward, could you say again the winery for everyone listening? Because if I pronounce it, I'm gonna jumble up some of the middle syllables.
Stift Kloster Neuburg is the place that is waiting for you whenever you travel to Austria. Stift Kloster Neuburg is just located 10 kilometers north of Vienna, upstream the River Danube. There's even a public bus going from Vienna every 10 minutes to our winery. So jump on the bus, take a taxi, come and visit. It'll be a great experience, and it'll be a pleasure for me to welcome you.
Totally echo that. You were a fantastic host. Way back when we visited in the summer, is a gorgeous site and is well worth anyone's time if you are in Vienna. Hey, Wolfgang, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for doing this. It's great to see you again. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for helping to just open the eyes for myself and for the people listening to try Austrian red wine. Everyone's going to drink Gruner. You know, we all drink Gruner. But if you see these reds on a menu, give them a shot.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.